With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Paranormal Dimensions is fortnightly on Mondays on the Paranormal UK Radio Network.
What's the idea of the lights being out?
You were holding a seance.
Well, you picked a fine time for it.
This is Sasha Christie, and you're listening to the Paranormal UK Radio Network, the UK's biggest paranormal network. And this is Paranormal Dimensions with David Young.
Well, my dear, you look radiant. If I were Rembrandt, I'd paint a portrait of you.
Hello, and welcome to the show. I'm David Young. Well, as I'm recording this, there's some sad news coming in that Lisa Marie Presley has died. Now, anyone who knows me knows I'm a big Elvis Presley fan, and I was lucky enough to see Lisa a few years ago at Graceland. Another very young death, which there seems to be so many of late. So sad. But as we know, life goes on the other side, and we can only say that Lisa is with Elvis now, and I'm sure they're happy together. I mean, this news comes after another shock that came just before Christmas. Mark Johnson, the radio manager, lost his dear wife just shortly before Christmas. That was very sad. I don't know if he's mentioned it on other shows, but another young life, far too young to cross over. But as I said, life doesn't end, as we all know. Okay, let's move on to this show. The guest for this show is Penny Griffiths-Morgan, and she'll be talking about haunted histories, of which we've got a lot in this country, with all our castles and old homes and everything. So Penny's quite an expert on it. I'm sure you'll find Penny very interesting. So here we go. Penny Griffiths-Morgan. Hello, Penny. Welcome to the show.
Hi, David. Thanks for having me.
It's a great pleasure to welcome you, and a happy new year to you. I know we're into the new year already, but happy new year.
And to you. I must admit, that was one of the things I said to my friend the other day. I said, at what point do you stop saying happy new year?
Yeah, I think you're all right. Any time in January, then you just you tail off a bit then, don't you? But since we're in early January, I think we're all right to still say early, happy new year. And like last year was kind of the first time I met you at the Festival of the Unexplained. Mm-hmm. And I actually didn't realise that you used to have a show on this network.
I did, yeah. Haunted Histories used to be on your network, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, how long ago was that again?
Probably about 18 months ago now.
Yeah, so you were on here at the same time as me then, but I probably didn't realise.
Yeah, I was on there. It was about a year. I was on that your network, but things sort of happened, and I just couldn't do the regular level of shows that they wanted. So I sort of Mark and I had a sort of chat, and I decided to go my own way and just do ad hoc shows.
Yeah, yeah. I know what you mean, because I came to a full stop last year and then sort of decided to start them up again, as you know, because you're one of the people that talked me into coming back again. as it happens.
Don't blame me.
No, I'm not blaming you. I'm thanking you, actually. I was feeling a bit down about it, really. And then a couple of people, like Neil Story, for instance, and yourself, you were saying you should go back into it. And I said, well, I'm thinking about it. And it was kind of the spur to come back, really. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. Yeah, I do still record sort of every sort of five. I do a show every sort of 5 or 6 weeks. But it was the day job was taking over a bit more, and the writing was taking over, and sort of research work and everything else. And I was thinking, I can't do everything. I decided I wanted to pull back and just do ad hoc shows.
Yeah. I know you're very busy with your writing and everything.
Yeah.
I've got a couple of your books in front of me, The Bosworth Hall, The Battle for Bosworth Hall, in actual fact, because you're a bit of an expert on Bosworth Hall. Would you like to tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, throw me in there.
throw you in there, yeah.
Well, let me just grab
the book. I'll tell you what, or do you want me to read it to you?
No, I've got the book in front of me. I'll tell you a secret, because I touched on so many different historical things.
Yeah.
The knowledge is all in the brain, but I have to pull the file out like it's a computer at times.
Oh, I understand that entirely. Yeah.
Because today I was doing some research for some new posts for this week on my Haunted Histories page. So right now I'm focusing on World War II evacuation, and so I have to kind of remind myself what I wrote about every so often. Bosworth Hall. I discovered Bosworth Hall. That sounds very arrogant. I first sort of started talking about Bosworth Hall when I was doing one of my very early Haunted Histories podcast crumbs, before we even joined Paranormal UK.
UK Radio Network.
Radio, thank you. Yeah. I was just trying to think of its full title.
That's right, yeah.
I can't remember if it was network or radio or both.
And also, we ought to mention Bosworth Hall is actually in Leicestershire, isn't it?
It is. It is, yeah. It's the Market Bosworth one, not Husbands Bosworth. They get very upset.
Yeah, because I actually got confused about that. So you might better explain that as well.
Mm. They're just two completely different places, and they don't like being mistaken for each other. But I was interviewing the guys from Haunted Magazine, one of my early, so Paul and Andy, from one of my early Haunted Histories episodes. And Paul, they've always been a very big fan of Bosworth Hall in Market Bosworth, big fan of the place. And they said to me, we'd like to do a show with you on Bosworth Hall. And I was like, okay. So I started doing my research and started to discover about the place. And I was like, wow, this really is in my wheelhouse. You know, the fact it has been a hospital for the poor, basically, so linked with the workhouse movement. The fact that it had been a stately home, the fact that it had scandals attached to it, the fact that it had one of the most amazing feminist women, Lady Florence Dixie, attached to it. And it was then, so that's about I probably was only just finishing my first book, My Haunted History, at the time. And I sort of, whenever I come up with something, I think, oh, I wouldn't mind writing about that. I have a list of places and sort of levels of history and theories and stuff. Mm. Every time I come up with an idea, and I've got this big long list. And it wasn't going to be the next book after I'd finished Paranormal Playtime, which is about the British School Museum in Hitchin. So that was my third book. This wasn't going to be my fourth book. My fourth book originally was going to be Workhouses. And then I got asked to do the Festival of the Unexplained, which was originally going to be in September 2021.
That's right,
That was almost a year before that. So we're talking October 2020, I was asked to do it. And I thought, well, I was just finishing up, I was just finishing up Hitchin. So I was getting close to sort of looking for a new book. And I thought, well, hang on, why don't I write this on Bosworth Hall? Then they can use it for the festival. And it's sort of a good way to sort of segue in. And that's why I started. It was always going to be a potential idea. But I also had the issue of, with COVID still around, with so much lockdown, I wasn't going to be able to do the investigations that I'd want to do. So I thought, well, what's Bosworth most famous for? And it's the Battle of Bosworth, when Richard III was murdered by that usurper, Henry Tudor. And I thought, well, I'll factor that in as well, because then that's something a bit different to just Bosworth Hall. And the fact that the battle, the armies actually would have come through Market Bosworth, because Bosworth Field, as you probably remember from the festival.
Yeah, that soggy wet day.
It's about 5 or 6 miles away from actual Market Bosworth. So it was kind of renamed the Battle of Bosworth, even though it didn't actually happen at Market Bosworth. And I thought, well, if I can put a bit of that in as well. And that's really how the book came about. It was something I thought would be interesting to write about anyway. Also, from a paranormal point of view, it doesn't hold regular investigations. So anything that you've got all the energy coming in from all the guests, but it's not normally being sort of pulled out by investigations. And I just thought that would be quite an interesting one, because it's one that a lot of people probably have heard of, but as you sort of said at the beginning of the conversation, they have a tendency to get it confused with Husbands Bosworth.
Yeah. Well, I did. I know that as well.
Well, in fact, one of the articles that was written about the place just before the festival in March, they did confuse the history of the two. And I did message the person, because I knew them, and said, oh, by the way, you've actually merged the two Bosworths. That didn't happen at that one. That's Husbands Bosworth. So it's not uncommon for people to confuse the two. And when you're looking at like newspaper articles, if you sort of put a search in a Bosworth Hall, you have to be very careful which one you're looking at.
Yeah.
So it was an interesting one, and I'm sure there's a lot more there that had I been able to get in more, spend more time there, get up to the Market Bosworth archives, which are in Leicester, or the Bosworth archives, which would be in Leicester. There was no, I could have done twice as much research, but I was lucky enough to give a talk to the Market Bosworth Society, the Historical Society, and when they said, oh, would you come in and talk about your book? And I'm like, really? You know, this place is like, it's like almost religious to you guys.
Yeah.
And you want me to come in and talk, this southerner? And apparently I did even teach them a few bits that they didn't know. So that was an honour, being able to do that. And although one of the main families who've lived in Bosworth Hall are the Dixie family. And when they told me one of the descendants of the Dixie family might be attending the talk, yeah, I was almost like, there's a pub over there, I'm hitting it for a vodka now.
Was it that scary, though?
Well, the thought of having one of the descendants of the family, and I'm talking about the family.
Yeah, I
don't know if you remember, I'm not very complimentary about the fourth baronet.
No, I know. That's what I was going to, I was hoping you were going to tell us about that.
Yeah, the arsehole.
With that name, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't
think we need to bleep that out, because it is quite, I mean, I do hear it on the TV quite a lot. So
it's quite tame. Like, you know, I kept it really reasonably tame. Although what was funny is when I was doing that talk about him at Bosworth Hall to you guys for the festival, I suddenly realised his portrait was staring down at me as I called
That's right, yeah.
Which I thought was, I actually found quite funny, because he does not scare me. He might have been a misogynistic bullying pig, but I'm not scared of people like that. But he was, I mean, part of the reason I renamed it, not in the book, but when I did the talk, and I didn't actually use that word. I did tell them I called him that. That's what, when I did.
Yeah, you did. Oh,
no, to you guys, but when I did the talk to the boss.
Oh, there, sorry. Yeah.
I did say that, when I did this talk to at the festival, blah, 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 I did rename him the arsehole. Because partly there's so many Woolstons, it gets a bit confusing. And also because, well, if the cap fits.
Yeah.
And I mean, my average age of people in this room was about 70. And I'm thinking, this is either going to, you know, they're either going to laugh and get my sense of humour, or this is going to go down but like a lead balloon. They laughed. They got my sense of humour, so they got the seal of approval.
You didn't get any gasps of shock.
There was a couple. Did she just come? She's right.
Yeah, what did she say?
But yeah, they yes, it was it, he was. I mean, he was not a nice man. There is a urban myth, I suppose is the best way to call it. And I mean, bear in mind he was there in the 18th century. He had three wives. He was, two of his wives had died. So he'd gone through three wives. He had a daughter called Anna. And the story goes that Anna was in love with the son of a local, some say farmer, some say squire, some almost say son of a gamekeeper. I think they're the ones who've read Lady Chatterley too much. No one really knows, but apparently she would go out and meet in the woods that encircled, because back then the estate that the house was, we're talking thousands of acres. She'd go and meet him in the woods, and Daddy Arsehole didn't like it. And he decided to set a man trap, so like a bear trap, to catch said boyfriend. His daughter found out. Now, she's meant to be in about 18, 19. His daughter found out and went into the woods to try and stop it, to try and help her boyfriend. And unfortunately, she stepped in the man trap herself, and it was very seriously injured.
Yeah, they're awful things, aren't they?
Yeah. Now, I did find, and I'm just looking in my book to sort of confirm it, the sort of dates and stuff. I did find that there was a family who reckoned they owned said man trap, because when the place became a hospital in, well, back 1933, it opened, 34, it opened as a hospital. In the 50s, they were doing ghost nights there in the Halloween to raise money, and supposedly they had this trap on display. And I was reliably informed by people at the talk that this family did exist, and they did say they had the trap, the Vero family. But what the point is, Anna is meant to be the grey lady who haunts the place, because she managed to release herself from the trap. I don't know how she would have done. She got back to the home bleeding profusely, and is supposed to have been sort of basically kind of left to die. Her father didn't want anything to do with her. And there is meant to be blood been seen dripping down from what was her room. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know, but one of the people who was at the Bosworth talk that I gave to the Historical Society, he sees himself as the official Bosworth historian, and his knowledge was very, very good. He told me his father had actually worked on the building when it was being developed from the hospital to the hotel in the 1980s. And he found red staining on some of the floorboards that wasn't where there'd been any hospital things. No matter what they did, they couldn't get it to, it just kept reappearing whenever they scrubbed it. And there was no pipes, no copper or whatever. So he does actually believe it's true. The blood stains are true, but what is interesting is that it is true that Arsehole had a daughter called Anna, who did die at that age, who died at the age that she's meant to have done. So who knows? Who knows?
Yeah, it's a fascinating little story, I must say. You know, well, I suppose it's a big story to the people involved, but it
well,
is
yeah,
a...
I mean, you know, his first wife died. I think it, yeah, she died actually just after giving birth to Anna, her daughter. So, you know, death is meant to have followed her around, but yeah, it would have been an awful way to go if it's true.
Yeah.
But knowing actual accounts of how Dixie has been, Wollstone Dixie, the fourth baronet, has been described, it's plausible. Because I'm not going to tell you all the horrible things that he did, but he was a bit of a pillock, shall we say. And he was also, he was quite pugilistic, and he did like to use his fists and violence. There's lots of things that he did that do not endear him to people.
Yeah. Well, as for the building itself, it's a fascinating building, isn't it? The old Bosworth Hall, because it's actually been turned into a hotel now. But the actual ground floor is actually really all what windy wooden stairs and everything. It's quite spectacular, really.
Yeah, in the main hall. Yeah, I mean, if you,
as I say, you can imagine it being quite haunted, can't you? It's that sort of atmosphere.
I actually find it quite calm in there. I mean, I've been there a few times now, and I normally sort of sense something's going on, and I find that big main staircase is quite active. There's always something going up and down it. I've a couple of times I've almost held on to the banister because I thought I'm going to be pushed over. But it's not got, I don't think it's got a nasty feel to it. The only time I have, this is going to sound very snobby, but I have a sense that some of the rooms prefer people who are well spoken. That's the only way I can describe it. That sometimes when you're in there, they seem to react almost negatively to people who aren't well spoken.
Yeah, like riffraff.
Yeah, I don't want to say riffraff, but yeah, it's almost like, you know, you're not supposed to be in here. Your place is in the kitchen, kind of thing.
Yeah,
you know, upstairs, downstairs, kind of mentality. The Wollstone suite, the big room at the front where that big stone fireplace is, that one I don't like. That one to me feels there's something not so good in there. But the room right at the back that was, I believe it was a billiards room back in its day, I know that one's quite an interesting one to be in. I've never seen, unfortunately, I couldn't get hold of a layout of what it was like when it was actually the hospital. But I do know that one of the side rooms was the matron's office, and that came up on an investigation once.
Oh, yeah.
That it was the matron's office, and I hadn't told anyone. So, yeah, I've seen the ground floor layout for when it was being sold back in when Florence Dixie's husband, ABC Dixie, ABCD as he was known, sold it back in, and I can't remember the date now, 1880 something, I think. And I've seen the sales map. It's duplicated in my book. That's quite interesting to see. So you can sort of map out where they've built bits of the hotel, like newer bits, what was actually there beforehand. It's and you can see where the stable wing would have been, because a lot of the old sort of stonework is still there, even though it's been enclosed and turned into like the reception area and everything else. If you've got an ability to see through the modern, you can see what it was. I mean, the main thing to bear in mind is that the estate that the Dixie family owned in their day was a lot bigger than what the land that hotel is on. I like, just when I've gone, I just go for a wander in the woods that are next to it, that are kind of private but not private property. You're allowed to walk in them, and if you and I quite like sort of not getting lost in them. It's not big enough to get lost in, but losing in myself in them.
Yeah, I know what you mean. You can go off and contemplate. Yeah,
yeah, and imagining what it would have been like sort of 200 years ago, if you were one of the sort of ladies of the manor going for a walk, and just to get away from people and everything else.
Now, I did mention a bit about that soggy day when we all went out on the coach ride into the Bosworth battlefield area. And most of us didn't go on a battlefield. We went into the museum itself.
Yeah, you wusses.
But
you
the
missed
Americans...
out. You missed out.
Oh, no, to be honest, I'd have loved to have gone on it, but maybe that's for another time. But I think the Americans who are here, the Tennessee Race Chasers, I think they quite enjoyed going out to the... they didn't seem to bother, did they?
Only one of them went.
I thought they all
went. No, the other two said it was too cold, and they both turned up wearing
shorts.
Well,
I don't blame them. They've got sense. Yeah.
But no, Brannan was, he was like a little sponge, bless him. We had Patty Negri of the guests. Patty Negri was there of the guests. Rob Thompson was there.
Yeah.
Dan Clays was there. Brannan was there, yeah, and they were sort of, I the general feedback I got from that was it was one of the best talks they'd ever heard. So it was, I had to wrap it up because we were running out of time. Yeah. Basically, because people forgot it was the weather was so bad.
Oh, it was awful.
I was trying to get us in sheltered areas so that they were sheltered, even if I wasn't when I was talking. And after a while, they all completely forgot about the weather because they were enjoying it.
Yeah, it was a nasty day, I must say. And the I think the sad thing about it is the day before was lovely, and the day after was lovely.
Yeah,
you know, just that particular day when we all went out.
Yeah. No, hopefully, I'd say the feedback I got, and the feedback I know that Rachel and Karen got was, she's good. It's good. We enjoyed it and we learned something.
Oh, it was a great day out anyway, because we went to the old 1620 house as well. No, it was a fantastic day out, especially being with like yourself and a few of the other speakers and everything. That was, you know, it's quite an intimate day, I thought.
Well, they're doing it again for the one in September.
That's right. Yeah, and I understand you're arranging the trip out again.
I am.
But I know you can't tell us anything about it.
I can't even be persuaded to. But I can tell you, it's not Bosworth Field again.
No, I know. I do know that.
it's one that is my dream location to get into and have the people who run it allow me sort of access to stuff to put a good tour together for people. So
fantastic! And I understand it's going to be a more select trip as well. It's going to be a smaller group, as I understand it.
I don't know. I mean, all I know is I got asked, which, give us a couple of locations you think you could do like a good 3 or 4 hours talking about and teaching people about. And I was like, okay. And I came up with some, and I said, this is my favourite one. We looked at the sort of fees. They looked at the feasibility of it. Yep, it works. And so now I've got to go off and write a tour.
Well, I shall be looking forward to it. It'll be fantastic. Let's hope it's a nicer day for this
one. Well, bring a waterproof just in case.
Yeah, I think you're right. I'll do that in actual fact.
I mean, it's going to be middle of September, so it shouldn't, even if it's raining, it shouldn't be freezing cold.
No. I mean, this last September was lovely, so it should be really nice. I think when we did this, it was in, was it May?
March.
March. Oh, yeah. So we hadn't even hit spring yet, really.
No.
So,
I mean, it wasn't. The thing is, the weather, like you say, the day before, it had been a really nice day.
Yeah, it was lovely. And the day after
was not that I saw much outside the day after, because I was sequestered in those blooming meeting rooms for most of the time. But, this one I'm quite excited about.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
I can't let slip where it is, but I'm really excited about it.
You can tell me secretly. No, I'm only joking.
Rachel and Karen listen to this, I haven't said a word.
No, it's all right. No, she hasn't told me anything, and I'm sure she won't, and I won't even ask her to. So how about that?
I'd lie anyway.
No, I'm sure we're looking forward to that. Now, you do
going to Stratford-upon-Avon. I'm going to talk about Shakespeare.
Oh, yeah. Now, you do a lot of writing for the Haunted magazine as well.
I do, I'm a feature writer for Haunted Mag, yeah.
Is that sort of every month?
Yep, every issue. Sorry, that's my dog going off then. Every issue.
Dog's going away. Do you need to attend to
him? No, the husband's in the room. He's trying to shush him. I don't know.
Right. He's not jumping all over him. That's all right.
No, he's in his crate because he's just come back from his walk.
Because, I mean, that must give you quite a lot of work to do. Also, if you're doing that every month.
They kind of have, every time I write an article, I don't write one per issue. I kind of do stockpile. Right. Articles, if that makes sense, because I try and write a variety of different ones to go, because my feature is called Not So Horrible Histories, with the tagline, sometimes history is just plain horrible. So
yeah,
I tend to do it on lots of different subjects, and then they can find the one that fits in with the theme of what they want for that issue. I mean, the one that just came out in December was on the Tower of London, but not on the Tower of London that people talk about normally, with like Anne Boleyn's ghost, the animal ghosts and everything else. I was focusing on its use in World War One, and sort of saying that, why don't people think that maybe a World War I soldier who was billeted there might be haunting it? Maybe one of the World War I spies who was executed there, and I talk through all of them, might be there. You know, it's, people forget about those, because where the executions, the gun executions of the spies would have taken place in 1915, 1916. What was called the short, I think it was called the small shooting gallery or something in its time, is now actually a carport for people who live there.
Right.
And I spoke to my friend, the comedian, Tom Horton, who used to live there. His dad was the constable of the Tower until last summer. He didn't know that. And he was like, I used to park my car there. We'd hear sounds and think it was just like a car backfiring. Well, it may well have been, but it may not have been at the end of the day. So it was things like that. It was trying to get away from the stuff that everyone hears about and regurgitates and look at something slightly different that people might not be aware of. So I mean, there's not many people, unless they're World War One historians, who know that there were battalions barracked at the Tower of London before they went away to fight in World War One.
Yes, I didn't know that actually.
So
it's not something you sort of think about, really, is it? But until somebody points it out, you know, like you've just done.
And we're talking hundreds, and I looked up one of them, and yeah, he died. He enlisted in the army at 14 as what they call a drummer boy tailor apprentice. So the minute he hit 18, he was allowed to fight, which was ironically at the beginning of the war. Now he died, and that was only the first one I looked up. So there must be an awful lot of them who didn't make it back. Who might be coming back, but nobody ever focuses on those because it is much more exciting to say, oh, I've seen the princes who were murdered, or we think were murdered, but it definitely was the princes, or I've seen Anne Boleyn, or I've seen, you know.
All the famous ones. Yeah.
All the famous ones, exactly. So, although saying that, the spies who were executed there are quite well known a lot of people who sort of know a bit about history have heard of Carl Lodi, who was the first World War One spy to be executed there. So I write quite a few different articles, and then they can choose which one of those they want for that issue that fits in with whatever theme it is.
Right. Well, how did you come up with all those articles? Do you sort of like trawl the internet for them, or?
It's a good question. I wish I knew. I don't know. The World War One article was, I don't know, how did I come up with that? I mean, I was lucky enough to go and visit the Tower before my the comedian friend of mine, Tom, left in the summer. I went into what is now King's House, but what was Queen's House. And he was giving me the history stuff he knew. And I think it's because I'd seen, because obviously my knowledge is quite broad anyway, I'd seen something about the Tower being used for World War One spies, and I asked him if he knew about it. Well, never heard of it. And I sort of thought, well, if that's someone who lives there who's not heard of it, whose dad's military, I wonder how many other people haven't. And that got me thinking about that article. Some of the others, it can be as innocuous as I'm watching Abandoned Engineering and I see a building and I think, I bet that's got more to it than they're telling us. And I might go and look at that one. Or I might be writing a blog for my haunted histories and just think, nah, this could make a full-blown sort of 2,000-word article here. It's not a 600-700-word blog. And it's just I might be looking up, researching something, and I find an interesting newspaper article about something that doesn't fit the research I'm doing for a book and think, actually, that's an article in its own right. So I have a folder for newspaper articles that might make a full-blown piece as well. So I'm constantly coming up with ideas.
I guess you're always meeting new people as well, because I mean, when you do what we do, or what you do more than me, probably you probably meet a lot of people, and some people, I guess, come up with subjects, and I guess you follow up on them as well, do you?
Sometimes to be fair, it isn't the book ideas can sometimes come from having a conversation. And like I suddenly get an inspiration thinking, actually, I wonder if I can build on that. Or it might be a place that I think needs people to know about it more. And it's like I'm lucky enough that I've got this gift, not gift as in gift to write, but gift that I can tell people about stuff and it reaches people. and it's using it and promoting these places, and is my way of saying thank you to some of these places and the people who run them.
Yeah, I've got to say, you've got to have the ability to be able to tell a story, as you do, I think, Penny, because you have got that knack, I believe. You know.
I hope so. I hope so. I do like to sort of change up and not always write. I do like to not write about the places that everyone else writes about. Yeah, or if I'm writing about a place that everyone else writes about, is find a different angle and something completely different that people didn't think about. So, I mean, one of the most common things happens is I never stop thinking. It's something that drives my husband, and he's probably going to roll his eyes now as I say this. It drives him absolutely nuts. We can be driving around, like up in Yorkshire on holiday, and we'll go past a building, and I'll be like, oh, that looks interesting. I wonder what that was. I bet that was an old workhouse. I need to look that up. And that's where a lot of this comes from as well. Or because I like going to museums and using my English Heritage membership as much as possible.
Yeah.
I might see something in there that I think more people need to know about this. So I'm just constantly thinking. It's why I'm so tired all the time as well. I was telling to you before we went on air about crating my dog to calm him down. I need to crate myself.
Yeah, put yourself in a crate. Yeah. Where's your husband?
I'm surprised he's not pulling a face, actually, because he's sitting in the room. He can hear me. Yeah, I think I need to be crated sometimes to stop my brain going. He's nodding his head.
Well, a lot of what you were talking about just then, I mean, it's actually your first book was called My Haunted History, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
And a lot of those places you were talking about is actually in this book. And I would really highly recommend it because it's a great little book. And I believe they're still available on Amazon, etc.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll give them a plug at the end of the show anyway. but that was your first book, My Haunted History.
Yeah.
Was the Bosworth Hall one was probably the second one?
Fourth. The second one was A Haunted Experiment.
That's right, yeah.
Then the third one was Paranormal Playtime, The School That Never Sleeps.
That's right, because I want to get those two, because I said to you before about the Paranormal Playtime sounds quite fascinating to me.
Yeah, well, it kind of that was the first one that I was not commissioned because I didn't get paid to write it, but I was asked to write it by a location. I was just finishing up, I think, Haunted Experiment, and it would have been September 2019, so it was before COVID, and I'd been invited to do an investigation at the British School Museum in Hitchin, which is the last standing British and foreign school in the UK that hasn't been requisitioned into something else. So from a historical point of view, it's very, very important.
Right.
And it is all run by volunteers and its own trust. It isn't owned by anyone. And I was chatting to the museum manager, and I happened to mention I was a writer and I was just finishing up my second book. And he said, would you consider writing a book about here? Like some of the paranormal stuff, maybe a bit of the history. And I was like, well, I'd need like unlimited access to the place. And I thought, I'll just try this on. Unlimited access to the place, unlimited access to the archives that you don't have on display. And you don't charge me for any of that. And he just went, yeah, that's fine. Okay. And then COVID hit. But they needed the book written within a certain time because it was going to be their 25th anniversary and they wanted it to coincide with that. So I had to do an awful lot of stuff virtually. I didn't get to do all the investigations I wanted to do there because of COVID. I did get to do a couple, but not as big as I wanted. I was turning up at sort of as they were closing the museum up to the public and just being left on my own in it for a couple of hours and things like that. So I'm not saying stuff didn't happen when I did that. It did. And then the manager left and I was dealing with the curator, and he took a little while to sort of realize I was genuine and that I wasn't some Fruit Loop who, you know, believed every single was a ghost. But then he sort of realized I was very genuine when I was, by this point, I was allowed to come and look at the archives and everything else. And yeah, it was fascinating. And because I've got a real interest in the social history, especially the Victorian social history, and with workhouses and the poor laws and everything else, and all this sort of thing fits into that, because it was a school for it was Joseph Lancaster who set the school, this model of schooling up. He basically argued that if you can teach children to read and write, you can get them out of the poverty trap.
Mm.
And that was kind of, but that, you know, we're talking like late 1700s, he was saying that. It wasn't until the Poor Law Act in 1834, 1835, when the workhouse movement, which everyone criticizes, was set up, that mandatory education for the poor was brought in the workhouse. There was an awful lot of people, children in the workhouse, who were better educated than the poor out of it. And I find all that quite interesting, because I did actually put in the book, and I can't quote it for you, but it was a member of parliament, and it was in the House of Commons, and he basically, and I'm paraphrasing this, said, why would we want our labourers and everything to read and write? Because if they can read and write, they're going to demand more money.
Mm.
Because they won't want to do the menial jobs anymore. And somebody turned around and said, yes, but if they can read and write, you don't need them to do the menial jobs. You give them more complicated work to do. Can't you see the progress? And so he was kind of, there was a couple of them who came up with this. I mean, you also had the national schools, which most people probably don't realise they know of, but they know of. Those were the ones that would have been attached to a local church. So, you know, when you used to have old Church of England schools,
mm.
voluntary aided Church of England schools, they were the old national schools. So they had quite a religious bias, where Joseph Lancaster, when he set up the British schools, he didn't want them to have a religious bias. He wanted them, yes, you learnt religion, but you didn't learn to follow a religion. So it was non-denominational. And it's quite interesting. When I looked at one of the registers from, I think it was about 1850 something in the school, they did list their religion. And you had Jews, you had Catholics, you had Quakers, you had loads of different religions, and which you think, actually, that's quite varied for that time. Whereas the national schools, you had to be Church of England. And then the other type of poor school you had was what's called the ragged schools. And I did actually talk about one of the ragged schools in my first book. And they were the ones that they really, I mean, you found those more in like the industrial areas where the children were in rags. So that one to write was, it was the first one that I've been kind of asked to write, and was given unlimited access to the archives and stuff that they had behind the scenes. And it was very exciting. Very exciting to do.
Yeah, sure. So I mean, they're very well written anyway. I mean, unfortunately, I've got so many books, I sort of dive in and out of a lot of my books and sort of read little bits here and there, you know, but they're very nicely presented and written.
Thank you. But, I try to do that with mine. If you want to read it from cover to cover, you can.
Yeah.
But I also try and make each chapter almost like I suppose, for want of a better term, an essay in its own right. So
yeah.
if you're reading Bosworth Hall and you just want to read up about Florence Dixie, you can go to the chapter on Florence Dixie and you should find what you want in that.
Yeah. What I mean. You can sort of dive into these books. You don't have to actually read them sort of cover to cover as a, they're kind of a reference work, aren't they?
Yeah,
really?
That's kind of, but then again, I do get people who say they do read them cover to cover. I mean, Karen Biffin, who is an amazing supporter of mine, her and her husband, they travelled from Hinckley to Norfolk to go on an investigation I put on for my father at his old airfield. They travelled all that way. She said when one of my new books comes out, she's bought it as soon as it's come out and she'll have read it within 3 days. She can't put it down. And I'm just like, wow.
Yeah. Hey, I've got to be honest, I've got them in front of me and I'm actually looking at them thinking, yeah, I want to read these cover to cover now, because they are actually really interesting.
No, I've definitely learned a lot of lessons from the first book to the fourth one now. And I do, I shouldn't put down my own writing, because I was watching an interview with the writer Harlan Coben. I love Harlan Coben as a novelist and everything else. And he said he's embarrassed by the stuff he wrote first compared to what he can write now. And I never understood that at the time. I do now, because I look at my haunted history and think, oh, gosh. But the main mistake I made with that one, I didn't pay to have it professionally edited. Now I do. Yeah, and it makes such a difference. I've learned a lot of things over the last sort of 4 years of book writing that I can apply to any articles I write. If somebody commissions me to write a piece of work, I can apply the lessons to that. It's an ongoing.
I think that goes with anything, really, doesn't it? The more you do, the better you get. I mean, you should hear the first shows, what I used to do, to compare to. Some people might think they're rubbish still now, but.
I remember when my first ever podcast, I won't listen. Unfortunately, I don't know where it's recorded anymore. The first one I did sort of 6 years ago. I don't think I'd want to listen to it now.
No, I wouldn't want to listen to mine either. They're terrible. But anyway, what are you actually working on now, Penny? I know you're working on a new book.
I'm working on the biggest book I've ever. Most of my books average between 30 and 40,000 words. The one I'm currently working on is going to be up to at least 50,000, if not more. It's proving to be a bit of a gigantosaurus. I'm writing a book at the moment called The Elements of Epping Forest. And the reason I'm writing that one is when I did the first episode of Help My House Is Haunted, and it was at the we filmed the interview in Chingford, but it was a house in Chigwell that belonged to Frankie Essex, who was in The Only Way Is Essex. Joey Essex, most people know who he is. And the production company Back to Back had taken this wonderful chance on me as this unknown historian, because the lovely Jane Harris had recommended me. And they said to me, it's right, we're talking about Epping Forest and deaths to do with water. Okay. And I'm thinking, a forest? Why would there be death to do with water in a forest? That doesn't, you know, if most people, gunshot wounds, hangings, those kind of horrible things, why water? And I kind of go overboard a bit with research on things. I'd rather have too much research than not enough. And it was some of the stuff that didn't come out in the actual interview. And it was Jane who said, you should be writing a book about this, because there's stuff here that I would like to know more about. And that's how it came about. And the reason I called it The Elements of Epping Forest was I'm finding an awful lot of stuff to do with the forest. And this is, it's not all encompassing, because if you went into the records office and you saw the books that are on Epping Forest from a historical and sort of chronological point of view, we're talking about 6-7 inch thick books. And I don't think a lot of people I write for, they wouldn't want quite that much detail. Everything fits into the four elements. An awful lot fit into fire and water. So I thought, well, that could be quite an interesting slant on it, that it all fits into the four elements. Therefore, it's the elements of Epping Forest. So you've got there's a chapter on the basic history of the forest, what forest actually means. Because a lot of people don't realise what its true meaning is. It now means a wooded area, but back when William the Conqueror came over, that's not what it was. The history about how big what we now know call Epping Forest, but actually was known as the Forest of Essex, actually was, and all that kind of thing. And then some of the interesting stories about it, the people who lived in it. And I've broken it down into sort of different chapters. Like you've got a chapter that's all about from the air. So we're talking about like RAF and all that kind of thing. We've got one that talks about, trying to think what my chapters are about now. There's some of the buildings that are in the forest that I think are interesting and people should try and go and visit. Not necessarily from a ghost perspective, just from an interesting perspective. There's some sort of paranormal experiences that I've had in the forest. There's kind of crime and murder in the forest because Dick Turpin is associated with it. So I mentioned that.
Yeah.
And lots of other things that people might not be. I even mentioned Queen Boudica, because there is a legend that she that's where she killed herself after falling to the Romans. And I've kind of said, I think that's a load of rubbish, because where she's meant to have battled the Romans is actually quite near Hinckley. And for her to get from Hinckley to Epping on foot or even on horseback.
Yeah, it's quite a trot.
Quite a trot.
If you pardon the explanation.
Yes. No, but I think she could have. I think there's two Iron Age forts in Epping Forest. So I mentioned that, and I sort of say, well, actually, I don't. I think she could have been here. She quite on her way from because she went Colchester and then she went up to St Albans. It's quite plausible she could have gone past it on her way to St Albans.
Mm.
And it would have had everything. It would have had the shelter that they needed. It would have had the ability to sort of mend their weapons, food, water, all that. That to me makes it logical as a transit camp, rather than where she brought herself and her daughters back to.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned Boudica, because I mean, I was actually brought up with calling her Boadicea.
Our
school used to call, was they used to teach it that it was Boadicea.
Yeah, do you know why I wouldn't call her Boadicea? She would be turning in her grave, because that is the Romanized version of her name.
Right. So is that why we were taught that? I see. Right.
Yeah, because that was the acceptable Romanized version of her name. I found this out. I can't remember who told me this, but the Anglo-Saxons didn't have what they call a soft C. They only had hard Cs. So even if her name was spelt Boadicea, it wouldn't have been Boadicea, it would have been Boadicea.
Right, yeah.
But the historians actually believe her name was Boudica.
Right.
So Boudicca, because the Saxons didn't have a C in their language. It was only a K C.
Mm.
So, yeah, so calling her Boadicea. I
just wonder when that kind of changed, because I know that ever since I sort of left school years ago, many years ago, all I've heard lately, if ever she gets mentioned, it's always Boudica.
Yeah.
And I was kind of always wondered why we were brought up telling, the Boadicea.
No,
you've explained that now. So
no
I
idea
that
why,
more,
though. Yeah. We were, I mean, I was taught her name was Boadicea when I was at school studying it.
Mm.
And I can't remember who, I genuinely can't remember who I had this conversation with. It was a few years ago now. But in Essex, obviously, you've got Boudica's Way. It's not Boadicea's Way, it's Boudica's Way.
Mm.
So, and it was them that explained to me that Boadicea is the Romanized version of her name. And the fact that, she was beaten by the Romans eventually. I mean, let's face it, she got quite a few of them in the process, but she was beaten by them eventually. It's kind of the ultimate sort of fingers up to someone to rename them and give them a Roman name when they were very proud of their original ancestry. So I'm very careful not to call her Boadicea, and I don't think they teach it as Boadicea at schools now.
I don't think they do. I think you're right. Yeah, I think all I hear now is Boudica.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Very interesting. I'll tell you what, Penny, you mentioned about some paranormal experiences in the woods or in the forest. Could you tell us just one?
Just one.
Or two, as many as you like.
No,
really.
I'm not telling you two. You don't want to buy the book.
Well, just give us a hint of one.
I'm thinking of one. Okay, so we know that the forest was, and this is true, this isn't legend, this isn't make-believe or anything else. We know that during the 18th century, the forest was a regular, if you pardon the expression, haunt for highwaymen. And potentially highway women, but mainly highway men, because the fact they could escape quite easily on horseback to different parts of it, the fact it was huge, we're talking sort of 10,000 acres at least, the fact that a lot of them had hideouts in local pubs and things, of which there was quite a few there. But in the forest, there is an old road, and it's called Old Stump Lane, off memory. And that was the route through from Newmarket to London for the carriages. And it kind of cuts through the forest. And the issue with this road, and you can still see it now. I mean, it's not a road anymore. It's like a track in the forest, but you can still see it was quite obviously a road at some point. It's very damp. And it meant that when it was wet, the carriages and stuff couldn't go through it too fast. because it was rutted and damp and the horses would stumble, break legs, carriage wheels would come on, all that kind of stuff. So they had to, the drivers had to go through it quite slowly, which when you're trying to evade highwaymen, you want to be able to go through as fast as possible, but they couldn't. So consequently, this small stretch of road, which, like I say, still exists, it was meant to be the sort of quite a dangerous bit to traverse for the coaches. And I persuaded my husband we'd go over there. And we liked, we're only sort of, obviously, Chelmsford, so what, 20 miles from Epping? I'd say about 20 miles.
Yeah, something like that.
Yes, yeah. About 20 miles from Epping. And because we've got the dog, and I like getting the kids out of the house, but my eldest son, who's 13, he's very interested in the paranormal. He wants to he's learning from me how to do it without following some of the sort of, oh, it's a demon ghost videos on YouTube and stuff.
Yeah.
He's learning from me. And I saw, so we'd gone out to this bit of the road, this old stump lane. And I'd taken, I had an ovilus in my hand and I also had a spirit box going. And I'd forgotten my speakers and my headphone for the spirit box. So I had the spirit box to my ear so I could hear. And there was voices. There was voices going on. And I had it on the fast sweep as well. So I shouldn't have been able to hear that many voices. And the kids were arguing, as kids do. And I was telling him to shut up because I couldn't hear. Someone was trying to tell me something on the spirit box and I couldn't hear it. And it was a woman's voice. And I couldn't hear, and I told them to shush or shut up, something like that. And at the same time.
Ah, okay. We've seemed to have lost Penny. Hello.
Hi, David.
Ah, what? Hello, you're back.
I'm back. Yeah, I don't know what went on. It just crashed completely.
Yeah, that's all. It's happened before. Anyway, your last words were, just as you disappeared, was at the same time.
Okay. So I've got the kids are fighting. I've got a spirit box in my ear because I can hear a woman trying to tell me something. It's the same woman's voice, and she kept trying to tell me something. I couldn't quite hear what she was saying because the kids were arguing right next to me. I've got the ovilus in my hand. And at the same time I told the kids to be quiet, the word silent came up on the ovilus and shh came through very loud and audibly on the spirit box.
Wow.
It made them shut up.
I'll tell you what, it makes you wonder if that's why you were cut off, you know, because, you know, they can do these sort of things.
Oh, no, my Wi-Fi, I'm having a bit of an argument with Virgin Media. I want them to replace my hub, Wi-Fi hub, and they keep saying, well, there's nothing wrong with it. We've checked the signal. There's nothing wrong with it. And I'm like, well, that's why it keeps cutting out then.
Oh, right. Oh, good.
So, yeah.
That's a good advert for Virgin anyway, everyone.
Yeah.
But anyway, no, I just wondered, because it seemed like you said that you were telling them to shut up and you were cut off. I just thought,
well, it might have been that. It might have been that, but...
I know they can play these funny games. I've had this happen before.
Oh, yeah, same here. Yes, I have had it happen more than once. Normally, though, certain people, when I'm slating them... Matthew Hopkins, if I slate him, it seems to cause problems with recordings and stuff. But anyway, so that's just one of the weird experiences I have. I'd say, I mean, it's not. I've not had anything like seeing a figure walk past, or actually, no, I had that thinking about it. I saw a figure outside the church, but it's more little things that sort of just happen as you're there. That like, hang on, what is the? I'd love some like. Steve Higgins, you know, who does Higgy Pop, he could probably work out the probability of me having shush come through on a spirit box, the word silent come through at exactly the same time on an ovilus, as I'm also telling the kids to be quiet. yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting.
The probability of me telling my kids to be quiet is quite high, but for all the other gadgets to be saying it at the same time. And we have had sort of other things happen when we've been out there walking during the day and gadgets going off that on command and all that kind of thing. It's probably one of those places you could spend 10 years investigating and still keep finding more stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I used to go to Epping Forest a lot as a kid, yeah, because I used to live in London, and it was sort of just down the road, really, from Islington. But
Well, you're not old enough to have been. I mean, historically, people used to travel out of East London from about, it was about 1870 this started. They would travel out on the train because that it was around that time they got train service to Loughton. And then they'd get picked up from Loughton station by one of the, they I can't think what they called them. It was like a giant carriage with about six horses. And they'd get dropped off in the forest for fresh air, and they'd go to the retreats that were in the forest that would serve sort of tea and cake and cucumber sandwiches.
Right.
And it was a health retreat thing. And during the sort of March to September season, these retreats were doing 16-hour days. They were so busy from people traveling out to the forest. The first speedway ever built, motorcycle speedway, was in Epping Forest.
Is that right? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I know a friend of mine and I, we actually, when we were about 15, we camped in Epping Forest for a couple of nights.
Yeah.
That was pretty creepy. I don't know if you were actually allowed to do that, but we did it anyway.
See, I don't find the forest. When I did a nighttime investigation there not so long ago, and one of the people was saying, well, do you find this freaky? And I said, no, because I grew up in the countryside. I grew up in the middle of nowhere. So pitch black, no light pollution, and everything is normal for me. I'm more concerned about the living people that might be in the forest doing sort of, shall we say, dastardly deeds.
Yeah.
That worries me a lot more than the spirits of the forest, because I don't think the majority of them would want to hurt you. But living humans are a different. And I think there is a saying about the forest that if all the bodies that are buried there stood up, there'd be more of them than the trees.
Wow. Do you believe that? I mean, do you think that there've been so many bodies buried there then?
Well, I think it's the forest itself is over 2,000 years old.
Hmm.
So it's very probable.
It's just something you don't think about, isn't it? You know,
I know that from sort of the 40s onwards, at least the 40s, if not before that, it was used to sort of for gangsters to disappear people.
Yeah.
The fact that people did live in it, in like hermits and everything did live in it. Well, they could have died in it as well. Nobody would have known. The fact that I was just checking, I was still connected then.
There you are. I can still hear you.
The fact that it wasn't until, well, it started getting shrunk, if you like, the whole of the forest started shrinking. So we're talking Waltham Abbey, Hainault, and Epping, that whole expanse did start shrinking more sort of during Henry VIII's reign, because he wanted wood to try and increase his navy. But even still, I mean, we're still talking sort of a good 10. It wasn't until the Victorian era that it really started getting shrunk down. There's so many sort of churches that would have been there, old graveyards that would have been there that have been.
Not quite had
a car park built over, but the bodies will have migrated under the soil. And there's an awful lot of people who have, sadly, tragically, taken their own lives in it.
Yes, I'm sure there must have been a few. And I'd guess also, because like you mentioned gangsters, it wouldn't have been too far a trot from the East End, where a lot of the gangsters sort of hung out. And I'm sure probably a lot of people were disposed of.
If there was no concrete being dropped, they would disappear, because how would you find them in the forest? The interesting thing about Epping Forest is if you go to the different parts of it, it doesn't all look the same. You can see different types of trees. You can see the different ages of the trees. You can see, so some parts of it is predominantly silver birch, and then other parts it's really, really old, sort of 300-400-year-old tree. It's quite amazing that this one area, although officially it isn't all Epping Forest, there are different areas, but we call it Epping Forest. It's very interesting to see the different dynamics within it, the different sort of life that it's sustaining. I'm sounding like a real doolally sort of nature there right now, but it is really interesting to see the difference in different parts of the forest.
Some of it's quite hilly within the forest as well, isn't it? It's not all flat. A lot of people imagine a forest is just flat, but it's actually got quite some steep inclines inside of it.
And like
from
I say,
from what I remember,
the suicides within, I mean, that's something that's very, I find tragic. And I've deliberately not written about any that are within the last sort of 50, 60 years, because a lot of those people will still have family.
Sure. Yeah. That's understandable.
But the interesting thing I found doing my research was that more of the people who took their own lives drowned than hanged, which I thought was quite unusual for a forest.
Yeah.
But there is the legend of the suicide pond within Epping Forest. So, yeah. So
we need to wait for your book to find out about that.
But there is, yeah, I mean, I'm sure I could do 100,000 words on it if I wanted, but I kind of thought, well, if there's a sequel, there's a sequel sort of thing. But I want to get this information out there, because the whole goal with my books is I'm not going to give you everything. I want you to go off and do some of your own work. If you find something interesting and you want to learn more, I've given you the tools. You go and learn how to do it, because I'd rather everyone learn how to research stuff if they want to. I'd rather teach people to do it than have to do it for them.
Yeah.
And that's why I've never minded I don't, had somebody criticize me the other day. They said, your post you put on your Facebook wanted histories aren't detailed enough. There's so much. And I was like, yeah, but if I put a 1,000 word post on Facebook, no one's going to read it. If I put 100 words or 50 words, someone who's interested might go, I want to learn more about that, and go off and find stuff. And that's what I want people to do. I don't want to spoon feed them. I want them to learn to feed themselves eventually. And that's my goal. And that's always been my goal. If people just want me to tell them something, I'll tell it to them. But if someone says, well, actually, how do you do this? What do you do? What tools do you use? Then I'm happy to sort of nudge them in the right direction.
Yeah. Well, you've nudged me in the right direction a couple of times, so I know exactly where you're coming from. Now, anyone listening to this, if you're in the UK and you'd like the chance to meet Penny, you'll be able to meet her at the Festival of the Unexplained next year.
And the
later this year.
And Parameet at the beginning of September.
And Parameet, that's right. I keep saying next year, but we're in next year
now.
It's this year now.
I'm one of the speakers at Neil Packer's event in the beginning of September, and then I'm also at Karen Frey's and Rachel Ashman's The Festival of the Unexplained 2 weeks later.
That's right. And I believe the VIP tickets have all gone, but I think between the 15th and 17th, I believe there's still some tickets for that, for the Festival of the Unexplained.
Yep, you'll be able to come and chat to me and buy some of my books.
And you'll have a few books and things on sale. But also, if you can't do that, you can get your books on Amazon, yes?
Yes.
Or even directly from you, I understand.
Or even directly from me. If there are people overseas who want one, I will send them overseas, but obviously they have to cover a bit more.
Yeah, of course.
Packing. But then,
how do they get in touch with you? Is it an email address or something? Or
hauntedhistories@virginmedia.com.
Right, there you go. And you can find that online anyway, can't you? Mm-hmm. So, because you've got a little bit of a website, I believe, as well.
I've got a website. I've also got the Haunted Histories Facebook page. I'm on Twitter.
Of course,
Twitter.
I should mention that as well, the Haunted Histories Facebook page. Yeah.
Yep, and I'm on Twitter as well. So, yeah. I'm quite easy to find if people just Haunted Histories. There's a few different versions. There's a few different versions of people have put Haunted Histories, but my Haunted Histories page has a copy of my books as its banner, I suppose.
I'll put some links on the Paranormal Dimensions page anyway to go with it, Penny. And all I can say, it's been fantastic having you on, and thank you so much for finding the time.
You're very always welcome, David, and sorry about the Wi-Fi glitch.
No, it's all right. I was just, when you listen to this, it will be a shorter gap, all right? So anyone listening to this, because I'll just chop that empty bit out. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, no, I was chatting away to myself, and I went, and what do you think about that? Or something like that. And it was
hello?
Where's it gone?
Hello?
And then I look, the signal's gone. And so I'm going off to check the box, and the 13-year-old comes out. What's going on? The Wi-Fi's cut out. And I went, yes, I know. Why is it cut out? I don't know why it's cut out. I was in the middle of a tournament. Well, I was in the middle of an interview. That trumps your tournament. Oh,
I reckon it was that ghost myself, but there you go. Anyway, I shall look forward to meeting you, Penny, again, September. Yeah. If I don't see you before that, but I do want to have those other two books off of you. Maybe if I'm popping over to Chelmsford sometime, I'll actually give you a shout and say...
Yeah, just let me know.
But otherwise, like, if I don't see...
Give me as much warning as possible, because kids, day job, everything else.
But otherwise, I'll have them off you in September anyway.
Definitely.
So if I haven't had a buy then, put a couple aside for me, because I'll definitely want them. All right.
Well, I did say, I can't remember which one I sold. I think, was it My Haunted History? I think it was My Haunted
History. I've got My Haunted Histories, and I've got Bosworth Hall. You know, the so
you'll potentially have three to buy in September.
That's right. It's the two in between as well. Yeah, you might have the other one out by then with a bit of luck.
Oh, yeah. Hopefully the Epping one will be out. Well, I say, I'm very near to finishing the first draft. The cover's been designed by the lovely Mr. Andy Saw. It's a brilliant cover, as usual. He does all my covers. So I'm hoping to get it across to my wonderful editor, Lucy, probably end of February, if all things are... So that will probably be coming out about May time.
So hopefully it will be out for September. It would be great if it is.
It should be out for September. That's the definite...
But I shall look forward to having that day out with you and everything. We'll have a good old chat and a laugh.
No heckling.
No heckling. Anyway, Penny, it's been great having you all. Thank you very much for coming
You're
on.
You're very welcome.
And, it's a great pleasure. And take care of yourself.
And right? you, David. Take
and
care.
And Happy New Year again.
And you.
I think we can say it again, don't you?
Oh, I can't see why not. We'll top and tail the show with it. Yeah.
That's right, yeah. All right. Cheers, Penny. Take care.
See you, David. Bye-bye. Bye.
Cheers. Bye-bye. There we are. That was Penny Griffiths Morgan. Thank you, Penny. Great show. Okay, now, you will be aware that I've been doing shows every 2 weeks or every fortnight, if you want to call it that. I've got something to report now that might please some people, might upset some others, but I'm going to be doing some extra shows over the next few months because I've got quite a few extra great guests and great shows to present. My next show, Mr. Rob Thompson, no less. One of the Ghost Finders, which you can see on Amazon Prime, which is planned to be coming out on January the 23rd. Now, Rob will be talking about psychic mediumship and life on the other side. So that's something really to look forward to. There will be some other great shows that I will be announcing. I've got some great surprises coming up over the next few months, if all goes to plan. In the meantime, if you would like to get in touch with me, my email address is davidyoung2qn@yahoo.co.uk. That's davidyoung2qn@yahoo.co.uk. So, everyone, please look after yourselves out there, and I shall look forward to speaking to you again shortly. Bye-bye, everyone, and thank you for listening. Paranormal Dimensions is fortnightly on Mondays on the Paranormal UK Radio Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.